All right, so this is episode 7 of We Out Here, and today my guest is Rachel Chen, and she is one of my classmates from uni here at Swinburne, and so she's studying film and TV, and I guess I'm going to move it to you that kind of explain how, like, we know each other and all these things more into detail.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, wait, am I going?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. How did we first meet?
Yeah. Are we
talking about that?
Yeah.
Okay, I think it was experimental class last... Or maybe it was even sound design.
Maybe it was sound.
Yeah, sound design with Niels. hopefully he doesn't hear that. Yeah, so I remember I think we were going around the classroom talking about, like, which university you go to. Or, like, exchange or not,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Because I'm guessing with sound design, lots of people take it. So there was a lot of people from different countries because we didn't get that question from other classes. And then, so we went around the table and then was really interested that Chloe was from the States. and then I heard that, you know, a lot of film and TV people go to San Fran on exchange. So it was kind of interesting to see the flip side, like someone from San Fran coming to Australia. Because I was honestly like, what's so interesting about Australia? Like,
I get that all the time.
America is so interesting. Why would anybody from America go to Australia on exchange instead of this sound design class? So I think that's how we met. And then, we didn't actually meet in an experimental because we weren't in the...
We both got into MENA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I saw Max the other day, looked at him and I said hi, and he kind of just stared at me.
He's always awkward.
Away. It's like, so strange.
Every time I see him.
I was like, I'm not too sure if he's happy to see me or if he's just acknowledging my existence.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, okay. And he's so tall as well. I almost walked into him and I was like... Like, yeah, walk away.
Yeah, so yeah, we had to, and we weren't in the same experimental, but through getting into MENA, we like knew of each other, and that's why we like were like, oh, are you going to the like?
And because like I saw you every week at Sound Design.
Yeah,
class,
yeah,
which is good.
MENA was interesting.
Nobody showed up.
It was very interesting.
Oh my gosh, it was the first film festival that our films got into, so I got really excited. I was like, oh, it's a formal event.
Same.
But leading up to it, I was kind of getting really anxious because they weren't telling us where it was or what time it started. Anyway, so I got really dressed up. I was in heels and everything, and I got there, and it was literally like what you would wear to uni would suffice. If not, what you wore to uni was overdressed for it. I was so embarrassed. I was so uncomfortable.
It was very underwhelming.
Yeah, to be
quite honest.
I remember I gave Ollie a message because his film got in as well. I was like, oh, where are you? And I messaged Jack as well. I was like, where are you guys? Are you guys coming? And he's like, to what? I'm like, to see your film at a film festival. And he's like, oh, I'm at home. So,
but it was nice to see on a big screen, like I might say.
Though. Yeah. Oh my god, mine got cut off.
Oh yeah.
That's actually ingrained in my memory forever.
Really?
Yeah, my first ever film festival screening, and the thing got cut off. I don't think Max even noticed. I think he would have just been like, oh, that's how it looks like.
I know. I was kind of like, what's going on? Like,
I loved yours.
Yeah.
It was so simple.
Yeah. I guess, with, which I'll probably ask you more about narrative one that you made, about, like, when you see it, you kind of see all the things wrong with it.
Oh,
and
my
it's
God,
kind
yes.
of like, wow, like, I get so embarrassed, like, cringy.
But the audience doesn't see it at all.
Yeah.
Because
they
just see it as a whole.
Yeah.
Which is really good. But you, obviously, for yourself, you always see the mistakes in it. Mm. And just, ooh.
Yeah, it was an interesting experience as the first
film festival. So interesting. I was so glad you were there.
Yeah, no, me too.
I would have died.
Me too. It was like, I was like, okay, like, this is, like, a good, I don't know, like, not, I wouldn't say, like, I feel like if it was too extravagant, I'd get really nervous.
Or if more people showed up.
Yeah. But it was kind of like, oh, the stakes aren't that
high. Yeah, exactly.
So it was chill.
I feel like when you're famous, you have something to talk about, like your first film festival.
Yeah.
Like a row of people showed up.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of people have experienced that as
Seven people showed up.
But it is good to have it on like a resume or something, like, oh, yes, my film.
Exactly, because they don't know how many people showed up.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, honestly, like the fact that only seven of us got chosen out of like...
Yes, of course.
Like what, like 100 people?
The whole year level. Yeah,
yeah, that's pretty impressive. Anyways, moving on to your short film that I watched, 1-2. I'm gonna read off the log line that you put on Vimeo. So 1-2 is a short drama film which centers around the protagonist Maddie, a shy and introverted first generation migrant who wants to pursue her passion for AFL. Let's kind of unpack all of that. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of this, listeners are going to be American. So what is AFL?
I was expecting that question. Yeah. I was like, is it AFL? I was like, I don't think they know what it is.
I didn't know what it was. Really? Yeah, I was like, I thought it was soccer, but then they're like, no, it's football, but it's not soccer.
Yeah, and I think it's confusing for us because when we go overseas or go to Europe backpacking or something and we say footy, we have to differentiate between soccer and AFL. So for us, we call it footy, and it stands for Australian Football League, AFL, Australian Football League. And it's basically... it's like a mixture of rugby, and like American football, except without the gear. It's just bare bones. It's just the person and a mouth guard, and the occasional like bandage and straps and stuff like that. Mm. But yeah, it's hardcore. It's just tackle, free for all. And then you play with like an oval egg-shaped footy that bounces everywhere. So, you know, when you play it or when they introduce AFL to you in primary school, it's the most annoying sport. Nobody wants to play it because the ball's so hard to maneuver. It's good. It's good stuff seeing guys get thrashed around literally with no protection.
Yeah, and it's specifically... was it born in Melbourne? Like the invented in Melbourne? This sport?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. So birthplace in Melbourne.
Yeah. It's only in Australia. Like no.
Only in Australia. Yeah. But we're trying to branch out. I'm pretty proud of it to be just Australian.
Yeah. So I guess I wanted to first say like my first impressions watching it. I thought it was very well suited to the short film format. Like, aww. I was like straight to the point. It was like, it didn't need to go. It was like short and sweet. And like, that's what lot of like short films, at least student ones that I see, are just way too like, has a feature film like idea. Like, it gets so, it's like, you're not gonna be able to fit that in 5 minutes. Like, and it feels too rushed, or like people are too, like to have such a big idea.
Yeah, and they're like to have that emotional impact on the audience.
Yeah, exactly, and it doesn't, like, the end result isn't that well because it's just, the format is just not well suited to it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like about it. I was like, oh, like, beautiful. Like, aww. It didn't need to go anywhere else. Like, that's what it is. And at the same time, has depth. Like, even with the 16mm films that we did this semester, a lot of them I felt lacked depth. And then maybe it's just, like, an experience or whatever, which is, like, completely natural as students. But I think it's also because people get, 16mm, and, like, let's do, like, such a big, like, have a big idea because it's going to be shot on film. But it's, like, I don't know, people get too obsessed with the camera instead of like the story. Mm-hmm. And but with yours, I love that the story was kind of what propelled it forward. Mm-hmm. And also love the shots of the food. That was beautiful. I just love shots of food.
I remember my cinematographer Nat, who was watching the rough cut. Mm-hmm. Every time she was like, oh, I'm so hungry.
Yeah.
And then the editor was like, oh, I'm so hungry. Literally, like, that's the first time I've had that.
Yeah, because I love that food as being important to culture, and like that is kind of a symbol of like, oh, this is, I love that it's a specific story, but it's a universal story.
That's what I was trying to get at.
Yeah, it has a specific insert of culture, but anyone can relate to this and having like a passion for something, but you can't really attain it.
Any migrant parent or like any middle class working parent, wanting the best for their child, kind of like goes through that dilemma of what choices shall I make that, you know, is best for my kid going forward.
Yeah.
And setting them up for the future.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what that's why I really like the story on this one. And
thank you.
Just kind of like a backstory first. So the film, this one, got into the VMC, so the Victorian Multicultural
Commission
Film Festival. Could you explain kind of how that came to be the festival?
So the whole program kind of started maybe like mid last year. Mm-hmm. So Vince sent out a call out for people who wanted to participate in a summer program, mm-hmm. which was run in association with the VMC. And it was like the third time that Swinburne was doing it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people come back to do it again because there's like significant amount of support mm-hmm. that goes between VMC and Swinburne. And then one of the criteria was, you know, make sure you're in Melbourne or you're not going overseas over summer. I was like, oh, I'm not doing anything. I might as well give it a shot. And it's at Swinburne, so I didn't have to do much.
Oh, so it was like a class?
It was like a summer program.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't know that. I thought you just made this like...
No. I almost didn't make it. So like February comes along and I guess just like scheduling meetings. We're a bit on the late side, so I wasn't too sure if the program was going ahead and I wasn't too sure if I was going to end up making it. And then this one time, I just had nothing to do. I sat there. I was like, Rachel, seriously, just do something. And I'm not like, I really don't like writing. Writing's not my thing. But wrote a couple of drafts. I think there was like ended up being 10 drafts for this. Because the first idea, I pitched it to a friend. I scratched it immediately. And then I came to this one. And then, I just decided to make it. I should have shot it a bit earlier because I was waiting. So originally, I wanted to end it showing the two characters, to show the two little girls, like, playing football on a training session, to show actually, like, the visual consequences of her mum letting her daughter participate in footy. Mm-hmm. Then that didn't come to be because a lot of football clubs didn't get back to me and then that's what delayed shooting, so I was waiting for them to reply but they never replied, so I could have got this done ages ago. Except I think I was color grading 2 days before it was due. So the criteria for the summer program is that you make a film for the film festival, so you just have to submit it anyway. But it's free entry. There's so many entries.
That's good.
And I think the film festival itself, I think, is like in its seventh year. And it's like Swinburne's little baby.
Yeah, because like I didn't. So, was there other FTV students that were in it with you?
Quinn and so Quinn and I were the only second years that were doing it, and then most of them were third and fourth years who did the summer program last year and came back.
So they like teach you things as well during the program, or just like go make a film?
I remember the first meeting, it was so uncomfortable. I swear, if they hear this, I'm so dead. It was just a bit, I don't know, I felt like it was just a bit tokenistic, the questions they were asking, because it was meant to be, I guess, run in association with social sciences and just like first generation migrant experiences, or like how we feel as a non-European or non-Australian descendant Australian, if that makes sense. And just asking us about our experiences. So I remember the first question was, what's your cultural, like, who are you, what's your cultural background? I was like, oh, hi Rachel, hi, my name is Rachel and my background is Chinese. And then she kind of just stared at me for a bit. She was like, and I was like, I'm not too sure what you mean by the question. And she goes like where are your parents from, et cetera, et cetera. I was like, you've only asked me what my cultural background was. I didn't expect it to necessarily mean that I had to just elaborate on my whole life story. So I felt like overall it was just a bit uncomfortable in that sense. And I almost didn't participate because of that first meeting. And then when it was actually about the films.
That's when it
I think definitely what pulled me to it was just knowing that the third and fourth years had a bit more experience, so it was interesting to see how they develop their stories and develop their ideas at a preliminary stage. So I think for me it was just like experiencing that.
So was it mostly, was the students who were there people of color?
No. So I think me and this other girl, Jess, I think his name was Michael. So there was like maybe a couple of Asians, and then the rest were European, but obviously like with different descendant backgrounds.
Oh, okay.
But like not of color. Yeah, and I think there were the overall participants, there were only like 11 of us. Sri Lankans.
That's interesting. I didn't know it was a program at all. But yeah, when I watched it, I was like, oh, I wonder why the Swinburne logo is at the end.
Yes.
And I was like, it might be something for the school. But moving on to like more specific about like the film itself. Why did you pick this story? As you mentioned, you had like a first idea that you scratched out and then you chose this one. Like, why this story and what made you want to tell it?
Okay, so my first film idea was something about like melons and like how you pick out melons and things like that. And I think that was similar to what you were talking about before, like short films that feel like a feature.
Yeah.
So it was just a lot of ideas in there that I didn't know how to tie down.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I came up with this idea. I think I was watching the footy, and there was, you know how Friday Night Footy, there's a lot of, there's a lot of Auskick ads. Which is like promoting AFL for kids at footy clubs. So through that, I was kind of just like reminded of when I decided on a whim that I'd do footy, joined the footy team in high school, and literally I ran away from the ball. Like in the game, it was so scary because, yeah, as I said, no protection, so I was so scared, and ended up running away from the ball. So then I was kind of put them together as like a, what would my childhood have been if I started off playing footy? And then kind of like.
So for footy, it's not necessarily like a male sport. Like it's could be some like any.
For sure. I think
it's just maybe male dominated.
It's definitely male dominated. Mm-hmm. Like I have this conversation with mum all the time about the pay gap between. Male and female, like AFL footy players, especially because obviously I think last year was the first time AFLW started.
Yeah.
Or like they had their first game last year.
Yeah.
So it's now like become a normal thing. Just this idea that people, like women who play in the AFLW, have to still have a part time job or are studying full time or have another source of income because the pay itself. It's so bad compared to like the males because they, you know, they literally build a career out of it and that pay will sustain them till retirement, like the, you know, the high contract a contract alone for them is like worth $200,000-$300,000, whereas for women it's, I'm not too sure, but it's a lot less.
Yeah,
it's not enough.
Yeah, if she has to get like another, if like,
yeah, exactly. Like most of them are still studying.
Yeah, that's so.
And are trained in other professions and things like that. But it's definitely the conversation with is normalizing around women in footy. And when I was looking for football clubs to recruit for the film and stuff, I was getting in contact with clubs that had junior footy for girls, like had a girls footy team.
Oh,
it's
okay.
So cute. It's so cute. Yeah.
Yeah. And then how did you? Kind of moving backtracking a little bit. So you said this was kind of like a bit of like a personal story as well, like some sort of personal connection. So you did play it when you were in high school, as you said.
Or I played one game.
One game.
And then we actually won, so I played another game, but I just stood there. I was staying away from the ball. Like, I didn't even want to get mud on me. That's how scared I was.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Really bad. So I think, like, in a personal sense, the film is, because I'm really, like, I'm really interested in footy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just, what if?
Yeah, if.
I grew up with footy. Yeah, rather than watching it on the television.
Next is about, like, your process in production. So, like, what was it like working with the child actress?
Oh, so good.
So cute.
Yeah, I was asking around with my fourth year friends because she made a film with a lot of kids, and I was like, how did you get the child actors? Because it's the first time, I had no idea what I was doing. So I asked her for help, and she was like, get in contact with your local like theatre companies first.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did, and only one got back. Oh, actually two got back to me, but one got back to me, and he said that he forwarded my email to all the parents that send their kids to the school, and only one parent replied, which was this parent. And she was super excited, and I was super excited. And then we finally, after a lot of email correspondence, arranged to go meet the little girl for like a impromptu audition. And it was just before she was gonna have theatre class actually. And she was just sitting on the ground, and I came over. And then it was at that point that I realised that I didn't actually, the script that I sent out for auditions, the main character actually only says one line. And the other character says the most.
Mm.
So it only had one line to say, which was like, it was three words or something. And I didn't even realize, it went over my head. So I got there and I sat there, and then I was rehearsing with her. And then I realized at that point that she only had one line to rehearse. So I was like, oh, are you nervous at all? And then, cause she's only what, six, seven.
Well,
she doesn't
wow.
speak that much.
Yeah.
She was just looking at me and she was like giggling. It was fine. Cause then I had to freak out in front of her with Jess, as I mentioned before, who came with me as casting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember I was looking at her, and that's when I had the realization that she only had one line to rehearse, and that I didn't actually give her a lot to work off. So I had a little bit of a freak out in front of her, and she was just giggling at me the whole time. And then afterwards, the audition went really well, only because like we didn't actually audition that much. It was more just seeing how she works with things and works with me, and it was just brilliant. Like everyone else did video auditions, but I knew at that point I was like, I'm getting it.
Yeah,
I don't care.
So how long was the pre-production to production? Like, was it pretty
like a
long time?
It wasn't meant to be that long. It was towards the end. It was a waiting game because I was waiting on football clubs to get back to me, and they never did. And then it was closer and closer to the deadline, so I was just like, nah, we're just gonna shoot now. But if we don't consider that time, pre-production was probably like a month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It did take a long time because I had to get child employment forms.
Yeah.
Which that itself took a bit of time.
No, yeah, I think 1 month, because with those 16 mil, a lot of people took a month for pre-production as well.
Yeah. Because it was just a matter of getting your crew and then figuring out their availabilities and then organizing a shoot day based on that availability.
Yeah.
And then if they couldn't make it, finding a replacement. So I think that was the time consuming bit.
Yeah, and you did that pretty much all on your own, or?
Yeah. It was fun. It was stressful. It was fun. I remember after the first shoot day, I got home and just like burst into tears. Like just of exhaustion. Just exhaustion. Like I couldn't even
It's the same thing happened to me with the 16 millimeter.
Yeah.
Like second day, I like just wanted to cry.
You sat there on the bed and you just like, tears are involuntarily coming out and you don't know why.
Yeah.
And people talk to you just like, seriously, if you touch me, I will explode.
So would you say this was your, what, like technically your first, like,
I think film? I consider it like my first
film?
Short film.
First
It's not my 90 second, because that was
how was that?
That was like bare bone crew. Like not even skeleton, less than that.
Really?
Two of us.
Oh,
you know, coming out of high school, where I did my media film by myself, my best friend came along as moral support, bless her, and then two cast, which who are also my friends, but like no behind the scenes crew, because I thought like student films, that's what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like, I didn't really know anyone who would be able to help, because I was in the year below. So I guess like back then I didn't really know how to socialize or like know who to talk to.
Yeah,
which I can totally relate to people now, because I'm kind of the opposite now. But yeah, I think I consider it as my first short, because it was the one where most crew roles were filled in.
Yeah,
and it kind of felt like a real set.
Yeah. And then in terms of production, like, how did you find that location? Was it someone that you knew, or like
family friend?
Yeah, I was wondering. I was like, cafe. Where did you get this?
Shooting outside, because like I had to notify both neighbors, businesses, because it was on the weekends. They weren't that busy, or they weren't open, so it was fine. But just we had to shoot the opening scene outside the front of the cafe, obviously, and it was Saturday. It was a beautiful day, so there was a lot of people walking about. So it was just trams, cars, 40 zone, so people were just like driving really slowly and like looking, mm-hmm. and then making sure that, you know, people could walk by,
yeah,
without like blocking them.
Yeah, so did you have to get all those kind of like safety stuff figured out, or was it all pretty lax?
It was all pretty relaxed. Yeah. Like nobody came up and asked, but I had my second AD with forms and stuff, oh, just in case people wanted to ask.
Yeah.
But it was just really a matter of stop, stay. And then people did, like, you know, when they realize something's happening, they kind of naturally walk slower anyway. So by the time they we called cut, like, they could walk by.
So how did you, like, in terms of, production again, what was kind of, like, your experience with it? Do you think it went pretty well, or, like, was there some challenges, or... Especially technically your first.
Yeah. I think the whole thing was new. Like, the whole thing was new to me. Everything about it was new. There was nothing about it that was familiar to me at all. So I'm still surprised that, like, at this point, like, I keep telling people, it'll hit me, like... This whole experience will hit me, but it hasn't really, and at this point I don't think it will, because what I've taken out of it most was just like, it was the learning curve, the whole thing, and none of it seems like second nature to me yet. So I think when it does become second nature, then maybe the whole experience will hit me. But yeah, I think learning, like, calling the shot. So just like which person is in charge of calling what and calling it at the same time. So it was a learning experience more for me and for my crew, because most of them were from our year level.
Yeah. Like, I've noticed with directing how in my experience of it, it feels difficult sometimes to like command a room. Or it feels difficult to like...
Because it's not even
like,
your job.
I just don't like being... Like, I'm just not in my... It's not in my nature to... It's hard for me to tell someone what to do sometimes. And, like, I know, like, that's, like, that is your role. And, like, if you don't do it, who else
will?
Even
as a director, that's not even your job. That's what the first AD does. Which is, I think, so the opposite for me. Like, I'm really confident in telling people what to do. Mm. Which technically wasn't my job at the time, because I was directing.
Yeah.
So then I think definitely, like, moving on from that, just realizing that you need to have a... good crew around you that understand their roles, so that you're not, or like who can tell you just stop stepping on their toes and like, you know, let them do their job so that you can do yours.
Yeah.
So I think the lines were blurring in terms of roles and responsibilities, because I think I was just trying to take too much control or like trying to make sure that, you know, the day was going to go forwards and not just stagnant.
I think that's I could understand why, especially if it's your first one, that you kind of feel a bit more like closer to it and be like, oh, this needs to like
definitely. And I was just like, especially because we didn't actually have a lot of time to shoot all the stuff. I remember Emily, my first AD, she looked at me, she was like, Rachel, you can't be serious. And I was like, I am serious. And people were rocking up late or like on time, and we didn't have 1 minute to lose.
Oh, wow. That's like, stressful.
Yes, every time we had a break, we were so stressed. Like, us two. She's like, Rachel, okay, these shots are going. Go, 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 go. And I'm just like...
How about directing actors? Like, how do you feel comfortable yet? Or is that still kind of...
Absolutely not. No. Like, I'm not born to be a director.
Me either.
But I think it was just like... with films like this, when it's super short and it's for something, like, it's not... for film, I didn't make it to get into the film festival. I made it because it was just an experience.
Yeah.
So
you didn't care really what was going to be the result for this?
Not at all. Like, I color graded in 7 hours or something, like in one day. And the settings weren't even right because it was due the next day. And the sound on it is not like we could make it better definitely with a bit more time. So I think. What was the question again?
directing actors.
Oh, right. Directing is definitely not second nature to me.
Yeah.
I remember, I think I was just method directing, if that could be a thing. I was doing it. Because the little girl, she was looking at me, she concentrates so well. She gets it. But then I'll flap my arms around, and she was like, yep, I got it. And then she would just go off and do it. But her acting was very... It suited her personality anyway. So she didn't really need to do much. It was more just like happy. You're happy in this scene, or you're sad in this scene, or you're upset at your mom, or you're embarrassed or you're excited.
Yeah.
And I felt like that helped me as well, because I needed to just use single low vocabulary words to help me communicate it to her. And then for her 6-year-old, like, keywords she could grasp onto.
Yeah.
And she just naturally, like, translated it into an expression, which is crazy.
So did you think it was harder or easier to direct the child versus, like, the mom actor?
Both were fine, because both the adults in the film were the real-life moms of both daughters.
Okay.
So there was the connection there already for the role as well. And they were both super nervous, the mom. I remember the little girl's mom, she emailed me, like, oh, I'm so nervous. I'm so excited, but I'm so nervous. Do you need me to wear makeup? Like, I'm so scared I'm going to ruin your film because I don't know how to act. And because the shots, there's not really a lot of close-ups on them. The camera doesn't scare them because it's so far away.
Yeah, yeah.
So they sometimes just forget it's there. And they're just basically talking in the background because it's more about the kids.
The kids, yeah.
And yeah, it was just generally like a fun environment for both parties involved.
Oh, cool.
So yeah.
I already asked that. I guess, so what was your kind of takeaways from the film in general? Like, what did you... You said it was a learning experience.
Yeah.
So what did you learn from it?
I think just knowing, like, who you work well with and what sort of people you work well with. Definitely want to work with kids again.
Oh.
For sure. Because I think from my media film in high school, I've, like, grown this sort of phobia of film sets. Like, my film sets. Not other people's film sets, my film sets. So if it's... if I'm directing it or if I wrote it, which will never happen, which is good, but like in experiences like these, if it's my film set, I'm scared of it. Like, I would not sleep leading up to it. I wouldn't eat because I'm just so worried because I had like a really bad experience with it in media where I kind of just like worked myself too hard. And then now it's kind of like every time where it's my film set, I know what's at stake and then I'm scared. Like, I'm terrified. Nothing scares me more. So, I guess, like, learning from that is just surrounding yourself by, like, a really, like, well-grounded crew who know you and you know them due to, like, meetings beforehand and things like that, and knowing how everybody works. But I think having a kid in the film set just calms me down so much because I look at them and I'm just like, everything's going to be okay. Whereas if I look at an adult or a teenager... Like, you know, it's so unpredictable. They might give you sass, or they look at you and you're just like, maybe they're judging me. You overthink it a bit more, but then with a kid, you look at them and it's just like, you don't even think they're judging you, because if they're judging you, you just think it's like, that's so cute, that's so funny. Mm.
That's so interesting, because, yeah, I feel like if there's child actors, they just, if anything, are like the best at their craft, because they're not thinking about all these other pressure.
Exactly.
It's just play and like it's imagination.
And if they're not thinking about it, you're kind of just like, well, I don't have to think about anything that's going around me. I just have to think about this moment.
Yeah.
And sometimes I kind of, you know, think about everything else rather than the moment. Mm. And if the child's there, you look at them and it's like, okay, you're my priority.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. This is more like background on like yourself.
Uh-huh.
So moving, straying away from the film, but we could also obviously still connect it. So this kind of like focusing on identity in Australia itself. Mm-hmm. So for you, what was it like growing up as an Asian woman in Australia? And kind of describe your experience.
Yeah. As a girl or as a woman, like, it's never really... That hasn't really stood out for me. Like, not saying that I don't feel like I'm a woman, but I just kind of feel like it's very normalised. There isn't a gender, like, inequality growing up. I think, I grew up in the West up until, like, mid-primary school.
Mm.
And
so you were raised in Melbourne, or...?
I was raised in Melbourne, west of Melbourne.
West of Melbourne.
Yeah, and they have, like, around there, there's, like, a big Vietnamese community, which is, like, for a kid, still an Asian face. So, like, for me, there wasn't really much of a, oh, I'm the only Asian amongst, like, a group of maybe, like, African, people from Africa, or, like, people from like European background yeah. in terms of visuals.
Yeah.
So like for a child, like it didn't really make a difference for me thinking that I was the only Asian in a community where I was like pretty well supported by everyone around us. Mm. But yeah, like because Melbourne's such a multicultural community, so growing up there wasn't really big conversations about that or anything that was too jarring for me. Like even when I moved across to the east side, I think I remember like I had a conversation with mum when she was like, oh, we're moving, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, what do you mean? Like I was 8 years old, like, you can't do this. Everything is here. And I think ironically my biggest worry about moving over to the Baldwin area was it was notorious for being like a lot of Chinese people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know, something about me, I kind of just like don't really want to be associated with a lot of Chinese people, which is weird, but that's like how I felt. I remember that's how I strongly felt when
I understand that.
Eight or 9 years old.
Yeah.
And then like not wanting to go shopping to Box Hill because like there would be too many Chinese people there. But then now it's just like I'm so indifferent to it. Like I think the more older I get, the more strong I feel the connection with my like parents' background.
Yeah.
Because then you kind of see the importance of it.
Yeah.
And like you sort of appreciate the difference that the Chinese community have with like the rest of the Melbourne community, so to speak. Yeah.
So are you first generation or?
I'm first generation. First generation. Yeah. Yeah. So I think I guess like not a lot of people to talk to about in terms of with family about like the identity crisis or anything like that.
I literally have the identity crisis.
Yeah. Did I have the identity crisis? I mean,
because I sure did.
I think I'm still in the identity crisis, but then I think I'm just I'm steering more towards like accepting my cultural background.
Yeah.
Whereas growing up, I was like. Didn't really think it was an issue. Moved across here, realized I was surrounded by Chinese people, and then the private school I went to, like, I remember I was at a softball game, and then this kid from this other school would be like, oh, that's a school with where there's like 90% Asians, which is true, but then it was just so jarring for me to hear because I was like, I don't want to be known to be going to a primary school where everyone's Asian, and I'm Asian, so it's like, oh, well, you're part of that 90%. And even like when I went to high school, it's like so notorious for international students, lots of like a big Asian population, and it's not like something that people steer away from conversation for because it's become so normalized that the East there's just a lot of Chinese, like not Chinese, Asian population, especially like in the student age bracket. But then now I'm kind of I don't know if it's because I'm not in high school or primary school anymore, so it doesn't affect me much anymore. But I think definitely, like, growing up with the conversation, I realised that it does have an effect on myself and, like, my identity and how I see myself as an Asian in Melbourne. But I tend not to think about it too much because then it's not like I don't care about it, but I think if I don't think about it, then it doesn't... Then my, like, Asian-ness or, like, my femaleness doesn't define me. It's just everyone's the same. Yeah, so I'm big on the everyone's the same in this... There's no difference
interesting
in that or determines like success and things like that. I guess it's just determine it like personal motivation separates that truly. I don't know.
So you're kind of letting like your work kind of speak for itself rather than being like, oh, it's because of, or like having some sort of identity attached to it and like you define me by my work, not by my who I like am.
Exactly, because then it doesn't get all political or cultural when like for example like my film getting to the film festival and things like that, like you don't really steer into that sort of area. Like I definitely felt it, but I tend not to like get engrossed by it. The success of it and the experience of it all, I tend to grasp onto more. Because when you think about that too much, then I feel like it has an impact on how you make films in the future and like how you determine, how you appreciate your own success.
Yeah, like the pressure that I need to make another thing that's sort of attached to my...
Yeah, I've never really thought about making... Oh, I had so many comments. I don't know if you have... There's so many comments just like, oh, like Rachel, you're from a Chinese background, why don't you make a story about that? And then I just want to slap them in the face because it's like my cultural background, whilst is a part of my identity, doesn't just define my stories.
Yeah.
Right? Because then it's like, well, are you saying that people with a, like, not wholesome, but like with a defined cultural background, people without that can make films
whatever they want.
Can make whatever they want. Yeah. Exactly. It's like, I don't understand what your comment means.
Right. Yeah, because it's kind of like you, I feel like for people of color, you just want the choice to do whatever you want
as
well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's no limitations there.
Yeah.
But then, obviously, because we stand out visually, like, literally we stand out. So I think it's sort of hard not to get engrossed in the, oh, is this tokenistic? Is this a tokenistic selection?
And you could tell, like, you feel instinct, like, like intuitively, like, like, I don't know about that.
100%.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad, but I think it's just me, like, just grasping onto this idea that it's your own drive that determines your success. And if you hold onto that, then it will drive you forever.
Yeah, and it's not saying, like, it's for those that do want to explore their background, it's not, like, a bad thing, like, you can, but also it's, like, that's not the only thing that we have to say.
Yeah, exactly. And it's your choice if you want
to... Yeah, explore that bit
about
yourself. Right. Because in terms of story, like, there are bits and pieces of yourself that you put in every story you make.
Yes, whether exactly, or not which is the same for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just sometimes it's, like, people's consumption.
Yeah.
Of your words or of your stories.
Yeah, you kind of
creates an image that might not be what you wanted
initially. Yeah. They already, like, kind of put you in a box before you're even allowed to make anything else. So in terms of film, like, what made you want to pursue it? Like, was it already, like, something you knew you wanted to do?
I get this question a lot. So usually what happens is so year 9 we had our first choice of electives. So before that everything was compulsory. Mm. So year 9 was the first time where you actually could choose what you wanted to do. And then I had one free elective spot, and then I was looking through the list of things. And literally this was make or break. So at that point I was either gonna do biology, which probably meant that I probably would be like a marine biologist by now. Or something else. But yeah. So I ended up choosing media because it was the one elective where you could just watch movies.
Mm.
It was 2 movies that you watched. So that kind of drew me towards it. And then I was so surprised. I remember my first media class. It was, we sat in a theater and we watched a movie. And that's never happened in high school, like, up until then.
Yeah.
So I was so shocked. I was like, are you sure? Like, are you watch? Because it was 75 minute periods as well. So it meant that we had to split the movie in half.
Oh.
So originally I was like, there's no way we're watching a movie because we have to split it in half. Like,
yeah.
They wouldn't do that. That just doesn't make sense. Anyway, so we did. And then I got good marks.
Mm.
And then I was like, oh, maybe I'm really good at this. And then I haven't looked back since.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you kind of, like, the transition from an interest to, like, an actual career was very smooth. Like, it wasn't this is...
Yeah, like, I think by year 10, I knew I wanted to do film and TV at Swinburne.
Mm.
And I haven't, like, I never considered anywhere else.
Mm. So, and which part of film do you think, now that you've went 2 years into, like, film school, like, what part of film do you specifically want to do? Or, like, is there a range that you want to...
Well, like, if I want to, because I want to be a producer, like, I think a range... It depends on the story, I think I've realised. Because going into documentary, I was not keen at all. And then, as you talk about, like, Maxine's documentary that came out, and watching everyone's doco, you realise that, like, from a producing standpoint, it's about the story. Because, like, you're not too worried about, like, the production aspects, which I'm always got big anxiety about.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of, like, overarching, over the top. But then, yeah, like, the production processes would be technically the same for documentary, experimental, or narrative, because it's, like, you need to grasp into something that's consolidated as a foundation of organisation. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it depends on the story, because experimental still interests me.
Yep.
It's probably not with Max. but, yeah, no, experimental was so interesting. And then, definitely see myself, like, collaborating with documentary makers or docudramas.
So you more so want to do docos than, like, narrative things, or?
I think probably more narrative.
Oh, okay.
But, like, obviously this industry is so hard to get into.
Yeah.
If I don't get the choice, I'm not going to necessarily turn away the opportunity to produce a doco if the story is so is relevant.
Yeah, I love. I'm like been now. I feel like I want to do documentaries more now.
Nice, because it's
much more. I don't know, in terms of if film creating change and like really reaching a lot of people. Documentaries, like every time I watch a documentary, I like learn something.
Yes,
and I'm like, fuck. Yeah. Like,
or like you're illuminated to an area of the world that you didn't know existed.
Yeah, and like it could still, there is still a story, and like people, I get there's this myth on documentaries that they're boring and they're like just all these things.
I feel like we're just watching really bad documentaries.
Yeah, but I've like watched so many great documentaries. Yeah.
I feel like I've had a really poor selection of documentaries that I've chosen. Yeah.
Yeah, like I think it's, I don't know, like in terms of, having a good story and like, and that's actually in real life and like, meeting all these people and like meeting your like subject and like following them around, I think is very interesting. At the same time, like narrative is also in itself kind of rewarding with like, because I actually want to write, like that's my thing. I love to write, like directing, I don't know. I would like, I feel like I'd only direct if it was my thing, maybe.
Or like out of convenience. I feel like I direct out of convenience.
Yeah,
it's just like I can't be bothered explaining to a writer what I want, or like I can't be bothered writing something and then explaining to a director what I want, because I feel like you'd always be conflicted in
in
how much ownership you have over it.
Yeah, it's so difficult, even with like a side note, the 16 millimeter stuff this semester, where a lot of it was just one writer, one director, so and it was just like the I don't think there was the one truly like had a really good collaboration.
Yeah,
because it's, I mean, I guess for ours, like Darcy and Tanner, like because they're just like, Darcy's are super chill and like he's like, you can do whatever you want. Like, but in other groups it's like, no, like
exactly, it's like, this is my idea, it's like, no, it's mine,
and it's like,
I want to change that, it's like, no, I don't.
Yeah, because the person who has the idea normally wants to direct, but then so someone else is writing their thing, and it's like, okay, like they're trying, like the conversation is just difficult because how could I write this person's idea?
Exactly, and especially because they
like, just fucking write it yourself.
They don't give us much time anyway.
Yeah,
so the idea literally pops into someone's head that hasn't fully developed, and you're asking someone else to write something that hasn't fully developed in your mind. And it's like literally like a baby in the other person's mind.
Yeah.
And it's like barely, it's still a baby in your head, so it's like
Exactly. It's like, it's very difficult in like that collaboration. I think it's rare to find that like good one. And I think that's the only time I'd do it, if it was like a really good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And like they didn't have the means to direct, and I was like, okay, like I think we won't get angry at each other.
Yeah, kill each other.
Yeah. But producing as well, like that's an interesting thing. I haven't met a lot of people who necessarily want to produce just because it's such a difficult field.
I think it's just like, it's different for me because it's a very chilled out, I don't know, I feel very chilled out in the role, because it's like you have a say in everything but you don't have the final say. And I'm like, I'm good with not having the final say because I feel like there's a lot of responsibility on your shoulders. It's like, it's how this film might be received eventually, like your choice will have an impact on how it comes out. So it's like organizing and just making sure everyone is in the right mindset to make final decisions, like, puts me at ease.
Rather than
me relying on someone else to put me at ease, because I'm just like, they will just aggravate me, so I'd rather be like the easer.
So do you think you'd want to produce for the 16 millimeter ones?
I think I'm gonna,
yeah
just because I don't know. I know why. I was like, why again? Because I was on the fence about it. If I wanted to direct or produce. And I think with producing, went to a couple of workshops, and I think I've just got a couple of fundraising ideas, a couple of new organizational things I want to try out. So I think it won't be as boring as I thought. Because I found documentary producing eventually just got a bit boring because I just ran out of things to do. Whereas was stressing about editing and things like that. Yeah. And you were like, I just really want to help, but there's nothing I can do to alleviate your stress. I'm just going to step away. And when you step away, it's like, well, I've got nothing to do now.
Yeah. Like, I think with producing, what I learned from it was doing the 16 millimeter. And they tell us, like, straight up, like, if once you've produced a 16 millimeter, you could produce anything. Because it's so difficult. Like, okay. It's because it's like
challenge accepted.
It's like, no, yeah, like I hope you do a really, like, good job, and like I know you will, but in terms of like I hope you don't like cry all the time, because like
I'll probably cry. It will be normal.
Yeah, because it's like so many egos, and it's like everyone wants the and I'm just like,
that's why I'm just like, because I'm such a like a loud extroverted person. As a producer, it's kind of like me practicing to step back.
Yeah.
And just to sit there and listen to everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I seriously need to work on.
Yeah, I think you do a good job, because you already know, you're like pretty close to a lot of the people in your year already. And like, at least, because it'll be the same
DOCO people. Yeah.
So it wouldn't be like, whereas for me, I felt like it was difficult because I didn't know a lot of these people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't want to like step on any toes or anything. Mm-hmm.
Or like someone's real personality comes out in your face, you're just like, I did not expect that.
Yeah, yeah, your patience get really tested. Like, it's like, oh, I was just like,
oh yeah, rolling eyes and just the ugh and the, yeah, the grunts and the sliding down your chair so you can become invisible. Yeah.
Yeah. I just became indifferent. Like, I just was like, I don't
know. Definitely. It's just like white noise.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't fucking care about this. Because if you don't care, you don't let it hurt you.
Yeah, but basically, yeah.
But now that, again, like, now that you've done 2 years of film school, so what's your experience like being in Swinburne? And, like, especially, I don't know if you would say this, but in terms of our year, the second years, it's, you know, majority, it is white people, and it is majority of the teachers are white.
Right.
And, like, how does that feel for you in terms of, like, learning or, like, kind of collaborating with other people as well? Mm-hmm. Like, what's...
Until you mentioned it, I never really realized. Oh, actually, no, I did really realize that not a lot of Asians, as in our year level especially.
Yeah.
There's actually not a lot of Asians, not a lot of females.
Yeah.
But I think that's just something that I've grown up with. Mm. Like, despite going to quite an Asian, heavily dominated high school and primary school, in both instances, my group of friends that came out were predominantly non-Asian. So I usually gravitate towards like non-Asians, not out of like preference or anything. It's just like it's usually what happens.
Mm.
So I'm not conscious of it until someone mentions it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just like personality wise, because I guess you can draw the association with like a lot of the Asians that I know from like Chinese school and things like that. They either have like a consolidated extroverted group of predominantly like Asian people,
mm-hmm.
or you have the opposite, which is just like introverted.
That's true.
Much.
Like, it's
and engrossed in studies or things like that, or are unwilling and not interested in testing out stuff like socializing, things like that.
Yeah.
So I think from that, I've just naturally drawn towards people who are more social, and then that's not based on ethnicity or anything like that. It's just based on, are you willing to try things or not?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That sounds so weird, but like...
No, yeah, no, I understand.
Willing to
that,
go out and like try different clubs or bars and things like that. But yeah, in terms of the question, which is, I guess, the lack of diversity in both gender and ethnicity in our year level, like, it's never... hasn't really impacted me in terms of how I talk to people or like who I want to work with, because at the end of the day, that's based on ideas and stories and the strength of that. And in terms of teachers, again, it's based on skill. It depends. It's based on how well they teach.
Yeah.
And that's not like, I haven't noticed that more like male teachers are better than females, or like non-Europeans are better than Europeans. Like, it's just, it's been a pretty random spread.
Yeah. So would you say you've learned a lot after your, in your first two years now, or are you still kind of like, yeah,
I haven't learned nothing.
Yeah.
Like, in the lessons alone, I feel like I've learned absolutely nothing. I think it's just the idea that Swinburne is so well-renowned, well-known as being like a really good film school, which is why I was drawn to it initially. And I think going out and about, like talking to people, networking and things like that, and hearing or saying that you're from Swinburne, Like, I'm proud to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think definitely people are positive in their reception
mm-hmm.
when they hear that you're from Swinburne and doing the Bachelor of Film and TV. So I think in terms of, like, the labelling and the prestige attached to the university and mm-hmm. attached to the course is unparalleled to any other.
Yeah.
Which obviously is a good thing. But yeah, I learn most from film sets.
Yeah.
And from the actual students that are older than us and from the third and fourth year.
Yeah.
So I learn most of what I've learned is from them. Mm. And then I guess the only thing that I've learned from the teachers is just persistence and don't give up and don't take no for an answer.
Yeah, like, do you think this for Swinburne, that a lot of students don't really make things outside of uni or don't have that drive to, or what do you...
I've definitely had a lot of my friends from our year level, like second year,
mm-hmm.
have told me that they want to make films. And then I guess it's just the motivation to get that up and running, or it might be financial issues, or it might be they don't live in Melbourne, or... the story just hasn't manifested, or I think there's a lot riding on just I don't know who to work with. So I think going back to 1-2, like, a lot of people that I asked initially, like my cinematographer, Focus Puller, and things like that, it was from connections to do with Italy when I went to the Italy study tour, and then I was the only first year there. And most of them were third, fourth years. Like, there weren't a lot of second years either.
Mm.
So then through that, I got really close with the third and fourth years. And then through that, I guess, like, had the confidence because I knew that they specialised already, so I knew what they wanted to do, and then I could ask them based on that.
Mm.
So a lot of, like, how 1-2 kind of emerged from the foundations was from connections built from there. So I think definitely, like, not knowing who to contact, or not knowing if you can actually get yourself a crew. But yeah, no, definitely. I think it's just going out on a limb. Half the people in my film set I've never met before.
Oh shit, really?
Yeah. But you just realise, like, when you start working, everyone knows what they're doing, or, like, should know what they're doing, especially in the third and fourth years. And from that, it's just, like, very encouraging. Because it's just like, they don't know you, but they're helping you.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. A lot of... Some directors that I've worked with, or, like, some sets that I've been, is, like... Yeah, they're not... A lot of people aren't grateful for all the crew that they've had. And it's kind of like...
I
felt so embarrassed
I couldn't do, like, a group picture, because everyone kind of just dispersed at different times. Because, obviously, it was a really bad time. But, yeah.
Like, yeah, it's kind of strange. Of like, every time I, like, direct something, I feel so, like, well, like, thank you so much for, like, your time, and, like...
I was exhausted, but I was just like, okay, well, when am I going to send my messages, and do I want to send them cookies, do I want to write them a letter, give them kisses, hugs, etc.
Yeah, because it's, like, a lot of people just do it for free, and, like...
Yeah, they do it for free.
And it's so...
Oh, they don't know you.
Yeah.
Like, you're a stranger to them, and they want to help you because they want to build up their experience.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, that's what unites all of us.
Mm.
So I think it's just, yeah, going out on a limb and just realizing that the world is not as scary as you think it is.
Yeah, because that is what I've noticed with Swinburne and my home uni. A lot of the students in my home uni in SF, there's a lot more projects going on outside of class.
Yeah.
Like, people just make their own things.
That's so good.
Versus, like...
I totally see that.
Yeah. A lot of the sets I've been on, like, 90% have been not in for class. It's just been, like, personal projects that people do. And... Yeah, I guess it was because I am in a fraternity, and, like, a cinema fraternity, and that is
crazy. Our fraternity's fascinating. That's
Oh
my gosh.
I could talk about it for, like, hours. the logistics of it all. But yeah, like, I think with Swinburne, there is that, I understand where that fear might come from, where, like, people don't know who to work with, because...
Yeah.
It's like...
Or, like, don't know who to ask.
Yeah, because, like, even though you have your cohorts and stuff, I feel like sometimes maybe a lot of people aren't very, like, super close, or, like, close enough, mm-hmm. or, like, in terms of where they live.
It's that awkward vibe.
Yeah. And that's... I think that's where people kind of feel like they should just not motivated, or, like, not...
Yeah.
Keen to, like, making one. And
yeah,
so,
I think that's what happens usually, because everyone keeps telling me that I'm so excited to make one.
Mm.
but it doesn't come to fruition. So
yeah, do you think that's also in terms of just in Australia in general? What's your opinion on the Australian film industry?
Jeez, what? Who? Okay. I couldn't say, but I think if it's Australian film industry in the broader sense, I guess bigger productions. You know, you go to Film Victoria, Screen Australia. For funding and things like that, and they're very selective on what films get made and what films don't. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, if you don't have that private funding, a script won't be made.
Yeah.
So I guess like that's the general consensus, which is basically just without money, your film won't be made.
Mm.
And then that's not even thinking about like who to contact or who to crew stuff like that. So
that's why there's not a lot of productions going on, necessarily. At least compared to like other, like, well, the UK.
It's like it's a sacrifice between, because only so much funds can be allocated to this industry.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like it's a sacrifice between a lot of films getting made, but with medium budgets on all of them, or only a couple of films getting made, but with massive budgets. And it's like, either way, you can't really win, because it's like maybe you make the wrong decision, but give them a lot of money.
Yeah.
In terms of reception.
Yeah.
And then if a lot of films get made, it's like, well, maybe they could have been better with a bit more money.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's always, like, afterwards.
Yeah, so, like, do you think after you're done with, like, film school, do you think you're gonna go out of Australia? Or, like, what's... Because a lot of times, like, I hear here around, like, the film industry here, it's either students go to the UK or the US in order to find work.
For sure.
And what do you think about that?
I think I definitely want to, like, line produce or shadow or production assist, like, really famous big production companies, whether that be, like, in America or technically wherever they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And then gain a lot of experience from there, and then kind of build the career from there. If not, doing, like, a master's at BCA or something.
Yeah, because, like, I guess, yeah, moving on to, like, the last bit here. Like, what I found interesting with, in your case, is, like, you do... or, like, are very interested in going to film festivals. And,
yeah.
Like, not a lot of students forget to do that or just don't feel motivated to. Mm-hmm. Like, they feel afraid to. Mina was the first one I've done. Like, a lot of things I've made, like, either in terms of, like, copyright or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or I didn't feel it was, like, festival worthy or something. Like, do you, like, why do you think you feel motivated to go to festivals?
I think that's definitely, like, a recent thing. So, if not for Mina, I didn't think that film festivals were, like, our distribution outlet.
Yeah.
Right. And even, like, with the VMC Film Festival. So, it's kind of still warming up to me. But as I'm submitting, like, Without Water, our documentary, to film festivals right now, I think I was attending, like, get your film into the film festival successfully at a workshop over the weekend. I think it's definitely just this idea of we're students, so most of the time if your film gets selected overseas, like, the university will accommodate you to go overseas and stuff like that, because obviously it's as good for you as it is for the reputation of the university. And then you have to, like, you know, be selective with which film festivals you enter into, because it's like it determines who goes and who sees your film and sees your name, and it's kind of like you never know when the right person's sitting in the crowd.
That's so true,
right? Yeah. And then, like, because at this point it's you've got nothing to lose, and then, like, you've got everything to win, basically, because it's like if you don't get chosen, then you understand that you feel the failure of it early rather than, like, later on in your career where you realize, like, oh, this is everything to me, whereas now it's like it's just a film festival.
Yeah. And, like, right now, I guess with students will get discounts for, like, entering, and, like, because I've heard
so many discounts.
I've heard from, like, famous filmmakers, like Barry Jenkins, who did Moonlight. Like, he was saying, like, festival, like, someone asked him on Twitter, like, what are your tips for, like, up-and-coming filmmakers, and he said, like, don't take festivals for granted, like, don't, like, just put them, like, actually put your film to festivals, because that's, like, a, like, such a huge networking field.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you also learn a lot because if you, like, watch other films and, like, you meet other filmmakers.
Yeah,
same thing, like, people seeing your name and, like... the festival circuit is an interesting, like, thing, and I feel like a lot of students haven't met it. It's such a new thing for me. Yeah, like, a lot of people haven't done it yet, like, that I've met.
Like, premieres and stuff like that, so many rules and things like that.
Yeah, but that's kind of, like, where all films kind of start.
Yeah,
it's festivals. Basically. Like, all the films that win Oscars or anything, that's where they start, and, like, they have to go through that.
Oh, like, that's how you get your name out there.
Yeah, word of mouth.
Yeah, articles. And I think, definitely seeing your film being shown at film festivals is so rewarding because... you see it from the audience's point of view. So, for example, if you make it or you not make it, so like VMC, I could make it, so I was sitting in the audience and just hearing them like laugh at different points that you didn't realize were funny, or not even funny, but just like seeing audiences react to your film in a real time is unparalleled. Like, you can't get that experience anywhere else.
Yeah, and like,
because they're strangers.
Yeah, and just seeing like your film on the big screen feels rewarding in itself. It's like, it's very interesting, and for 1-2, you won an award as well on the
The encouragement award.
That's sick.
Yeah.
Encouraging. Yeah, was there a bunch of films that got shown, like, or?
Yeah, so there was like, I think there was 11 films being shown. And then there was an under 25 winner, over 25 winner, encouragement award, judge award. An audience award.
So like there's like a panel of like people who like gave out the awards, or
yes, so there was the producer writer of Top End Wedding that's out right now, so he was there to present one of the awards. One of the executive directors of SBS presented mine. Sue Maslin presented one, and a representative from CommBank, one of their major sponsors, gave another award.
But yeah, it's really good, like, in terms of the trajectory of all, like, the films that you've made so far, like, even if you're starting out, like, you've done more than a lot of the film students I know that's graduated. Like, it's just, like, it's crazy. Like, and I think, because you have thought about, you went through, like, a very smart path of, like, the festival route, and, like, even going to programs, and, like, meeting people, but, like... when you
making up the most of my time.
Yeah, exactly, because then I feel like even though it's Winburne students, I haven't really seen that, I don't know, drive is the correct word, but like like kind of reaching out to other, like, even if it's third or fourth years, or like people who have more learning and resources.
You learn so much from them, it's crazy.
Yeah, though if you can't, when you aren't on, when you're not satisfied within your course, you kind of like,
first year, I was just like, this is not enough. Like, this is not good enough.
Where a lot of other students just feel like,
I guess that's why, like, you see people, like, leaving the course.
Yeah.
Or you see just people being generally unhappy a bit, like, I don't know if introvert is the right way to say it, but just a bit shy in getting their ideas out there, which I think is, like, you know, which is sad because it's definitely, I don't think that they came into the course being like that. Because as we talked about before, like, just encouragement from teachers, like, the lack of encouragement, or the lack of motivation, inspiration. Like, yeah, I don't know. First year, definitely just the lack of the safe space to share your creativity definitely impacted me. Like, before Italy, literally 3 weeks before I was going to leave, I was so convinced I was going to come back from Italy, changing courses.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I told myself, like, I remember second week of the Italy study tour, I was like to my friend, have you heard much about the arts course? I was so convinced that I was going to do arts. And then started, you know, watching the movies. It was so chill. Like, we didn't do anything there, which technically you might think, like, might deter me, like, might encourage me more to do something else because it was so unproductive. But it was just watching Italian movies and then being, like, surrounded by the culture, you could touch it, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know, something about that place changed my mind.
So do you think now that with what you've had under your belt now, you feel more confident, like, keep going with, like, the course and just like finishing the... like up to fourth year and like,
yeah, it's definitely like gonna that. Finish it.
Like, do you feel more ready now than like when you first started, like, to, like,
I think,
put yourself more out there?
I think Italy was the turning point, and everything after that, obviously there's been a lot of like step down, like let downs and stuff like that, and things, people that turn you away, and failures along the way that led me to here. But I think I'll definitely stick around, because it matters on what you grasp onto. So just if you're not grasping onto the failures and fixating on that, then I should be okay.
And like there's more, you feel like the motivation is there, people just kind of need to find it, and
just like I found mine.
Awesome. Well, on that note, so that's the end of the podcast. Thank you, Rachel, for having me.
Chloe.
Do you think you'll be posting 1-2 soon, like for everyone to see?
I think after Festival Circuit, it will be up. But I think winners get shown on SBS On Demand as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah, and yours got shown to the Immigration Museum.
Yeah,
as well.
Oh, it was so empty. Oh. It was so weird and so empty. There was one old lady in the back. But it was good fun.
Yeah, at least my film got shown at Acme.
More people were at MENA. It was literally just in a basement.
Oh, really?
It was good fun.
But Acme was full on, or?
Oh, yeah, it was sold out.
Oh, yeah, see, that's...
Yeah, it was crazy.
That's sick.
Literally, everything about that was just...
That's pretty sick.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyways, once that's all out, I'll let everyone know.
I'll link you, and then you'll be able to link it wherever you want.
Well, thank you again, Rachel, for coming to do that. Thank you.